I'm here with my boy Tyrone Somerville this morning. What's going on, man?
Hey, nothing much, man. Glad to be here. Thank you for allowing me to have this time to hang out with you, man.
Hey, it's all real, man. It's all good pleasure right here.
Oh yeah.
You know what? We go back kind of a ways, man. We are part of a special fraternity, aren't we?
Oh yeah, man. It's only a few of us that do what we do.
I know. So why don't you do me a favor, man, and go ahead and just introduce yourself. Let us know who you are and where you're from. How old are you? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right. Well, I'm originally from a place called Yonkers, New York.
Yonkers.
Right next to the Bronx. I'm 38 years old, coming July, so I got about another month and a half of youngness before I hit the pre-40 track.
Yeah.
Husband, four kids.
Four kids?
Yeah, I got four of them, man. A 15-year-old son, 12-year-old daughter, 4-year-old daughter, and a 3-month-old son. So I've been putting in work.
Yeah. I would say that, but you know, children are a blessing, man.
Oh yeah, man.
I love children, man. Love them to death. Matter of fact, I'm going out today. I kind of help with coaching the little league or my daughter's t-ball team. So,
oh okay.
You know, it's so exciting, man. They're our future. So, you know, I'm glad you are way able to multiply.
Oh yeah, man. I'm done though. I've replenished my part of the earth. And me and my wife, we're done having babies now. We're just going to raise babies. And part of what I do down in Kent, I'm a youth pastor down there, so I mentor a lot of our kids that come through from the high school. And many of them go on to college and the workforce, and many of them don't. And I think that's my drive. I think my drive with that part of my life is I kind of want to be like you know, mentoring your own daughter. I want to mentor my own kids and then somebody else's kids at the same time. So that's why I do a lot of what I do for other people. My wife often gets on me for doing that. She says, you do a lot for other people. You don't do enough for yourself. But I think life is about that. Just like we as fathers are imparting, you know, ideals into our children, we also have a responsibility to impart ideals into other people's children who may not get the same fortunes that we give our children. So I hold that real near and dear to my heart. And I'm grateful to be a part of a fraternity with brothers like you who've taken the responsibility of fatherhood seriously.
That's right, man. That's right. That's the only way to do it. And, you know, you said something. It is about being selfless. And a lot of people wouldn't understand about what selflessness really is. And I know you and I were recruiters together in the Army, man.
We
recruited. We came on duty at the same time, you know, about the same point of our careers too.
Right.
And that's where we first met at, huh?
Yeah, man, that was a fun day. I remember I was a nervous wreck because, again, the kid from the projects talking to other people about the Army wasn't something I dreamed of doing. And I remember walking in, I won't say the name of the person's office we walked into, and we all had the same feeling about that person.
Yeah.
And just wanted to succeed and not knowing how that success was going to mature and how it was going to develop. But I'm grateful to have met you and be a part of that group of people to take that endeavor to the next level.
You know, I was cleaning out my garage about a week ago, and I came across this plaque. This little plaque that I got from leaving that station, and and I remember I was cleaning up and I was reading it, and I saw your name on it. You had wrote something there to me, and I was just busted out laughing, man. It was just, you know, because you know how I call you Summer Sausage.
Yeah, man. Summer Sausage.
Summer Sausage, my man. You know, but how did you go about making the decision to join the military?
Well, I was having some anxiety about my first child, my son, being born, and I wanted to give him everything that I hadn't gotten in my life, and I wanted to raise him in a neighborhood that I had only dreamed about. And I didn't know how to get there, but I had two cousins that had joined the Army, and they used to send us pictures back. This is back before smartphones, when they actually had to send pictures back.
Right.
And I would be like, wow, my cousin got carpet. I had never seen a house with carpet before. It was something that minute and that juvenile that drove me to join the Army. And so what I did, I went to my great-grandmother, And I said, Nana, I want to join the Army. And she said, well, I don't know if that's a good idea, but here's what you do. I believe, and she also believes that things come in signs, and then things in this world, it's like a little sign to say if it's a good idea or a bad idea. So she said, if you watch TV today and you see an Army commercial, if you see three Army commercials, join the Army. And I said, okay. So I just went back to my girlfriend's house, and I started watching TV, and I was watching the Knicks game. And I remember I had never seen an Army commercial during a Knicks game ever in my life. But that day, it was a Saturday. That day, I saw about 15 Army commercials. So that was the nail in the coffin for me. And then I looked at her stomach, and I imagined, you know, what life I wanted to give my son. And I said, this is a good decision. So I called my cousins. They talked to me about it. And I decided that it was a good deal for me. And I went down, took the test, and the rest was history.
All right. That's what's up, man. Now, what was your job in the Army?
My first job was a 31 Lima, cable systems installer maintainer is the military term for it. But basically, I was the guy that ran cable for any communication systems that we employed. But what happened, I'm a kid from New York, and so a lot of times we look for ways to advance. And so I was hooking up a computer system for a gentleman who didn't speak very good English. And I said to him, I said, hey, what is this? What is this box with all these lights and buttons? And it was a data package system. And so he was able to teach me how to work the data package. So I was able to become a 74 Bravo. Now it's called 25 Bravo, a network systems administrator. So I had those two jobs my entire career, other than the gig that we took together.
Right.
Those were the two jobs that I had my entire career.
All right. Now, did you have any combat experience during that time?
Not in the sense that I would call combat. I got deployed, but we were stationed in Kuwait, and I did a couple of convoy duties up to Iraq with some MP battalions and some engineer battalions. Supposed to be delivering communication goods, but when you get there, things change, as well as you know.
I do.
You know, things get up there, you start getting hit with things that you never even expected. And so the kid from Brooklyn, I say I'm from Brooklyn, even though I'm from Yonkers, because I did most of my playground work, my mom called it, in Brooklyn. My right. Brooklyn instincts took over, and no one had to tell me what to do. I didn't need a strategy lesson at that point. I knew exactly what to do. So I had a little bit of what you would call combat, but nothing major. I wasn't kicking in doors and anything like that. But we definitely had some engagements. And I think I was set up for that, being from the city and dealing with that in New York. And it was a little bit different, because I tell people, at least in Iraq, I knew where the enemy was coming from. And in New York, I had no idea. In a moment's notice, everything around you can change. And that kind of prepared me. So my combat experience was very, very different than a lot of people who were living in Iraq. I traveled to Iraq on different occasions, supposedly just to deliver supplies, like I said, but things change when you get up there across that berm.
They do change, man. They do change. And you said you're a kid from Brooklyn, but, you know, that's where it all kind of went down, the whole start of this war, you know, right there, kind of in your backyard, you know, with the Twin Towers and stuff. Do you remember where you were when that happened?
Oh, yeah. I was in Germany, in Kitzingen, Germany. I had got a day off from work because I won the uniform competition. You know, every day they were coming in inspecting that day.
Because you're sharp.
Because I was sharp.
Right.
I was always, you know, it's called locked and cocked, ready to rock. I was always that. And so I was able to go home, and I was still sitting in my uniform, proud of myself, watching the baseball game from the night before. And I saw the news came across AFN, and immediately I thought about my sister-in-law and my uncle, because she worked down there. And I just wanted to make sure that she was okay. But of course, there was no communication to New York at that time. And it was scary, you know, because you don't know who's where and you can't reach anybody at that moment. And I remember my neighbor screaming because her sister actually worked in one of the towers. And so she couldn't find her sister for a couple of weeks. And it was a unique experience being from the city of New York, the state of New York, and seeing, you know, your home being attacked like that. It's hard to relay that to people who've never had that happen. That was something I would have never expected to happen on American soil ever in my in my life. And yet, here we were looking at those. I mean, these were skylines when you flew in to New York. That was the first thing you noticed was the Twin Towers. And here they are on fire. It was something I've never experienced. Hopefully, I'll never experience it again.
Well, you know, as long as we have great people like you protecting our nation, I don't think it will happen again. And I'm crossing my fingers that it doesn't. Mm. Now, throughout your journey, you went through the military and you've seen all kinds of stuff. And how did you make the decision to come to Evergreen?
Well, that was a really unique decision. I was stationed in Fort Huachuca, Arizona, and I was supposed to be deployed to Afghanistan. And before every deployment, we take a physical. And I had passed my physicals before, but this particular time, I had a wonderful vigilant doctor who did a complete body scan and found that my joints weren't in the best of shape and that combat wouldn't be a good fit for me. And so eventually I was medically discharged from the Army, and I got back to Washington, and my wife and I began to kind of look at what options I had for work. And the options were few without a college degree. And so she encouraged me to try community college, which I did. Scared me unlike anything else. I've never been that afraid in my life. And I'm thinking, this is just education. Why am I afraid of education? Because I wasn't prepared for college. My high school career was not a stellar one. I focused mainly on sports and music and art and things like that. And so when I was in community college, I thought that would be the end. I would get my AA degree and that would be it for me, because I couldn't see myself succeeding at a higher level. But one day I was walking down the stairs of my community college and saw the rep from Evergreen and asked some questions. And to be honest, the first thing that stuck in my mind was no grades. I can go to an institution of higher learning and not worry about getting an A. That's what drove me to come to Evergreen, because the education was not about impressing an individual who already had a doctoral degree, but it was about developing my own skills and impressing myself and putting my best foot forward. So I came to Evergreen from a situation of fear. I didn't want to fail, and Evergreen presented me the best opportunity to make sure that success was inevitable.
That's awesome, man. You said it. You made the decision to join the military based on something that your grandmother had told you, right?
Right.
Is she the most influential person in your life?
No, she was. But actually, my wife and kids are the most influential people in my life. If you ask them and you ask the people around me, I talk about my wife everywhere I go. And this lady is probably the most courageous person I've ever met in my entire life. She's gone through things that I think would have crippled me, but she's taken those things and turned them into stepping stones to greatness. And my kids inspire me because they just take everything that I give them and they make it better. And a lot of times I was only able to give them very little. And they were able to take that and just turn it into just remarkable things. And those five people really drive me to be the best that I can be, because I owe it to them. I tell people, my wife didn't have to marry me and my kids didn't ask to be here. But because both of those things happened, I owe it to them to give them everything I got.
That's awesome. Now, what does your wife do?
Nothing now. She stays at home and she raises the babies. But she was a nurse. She went to the University of Washington and then transferred to the University of South Florida to complete her degree. And then she went to this the Irwin Institute in Florida to get all her nursing certifications. But now she's a stay-at-home mom and she's great. I mean, she's a better mom than anybody I've ever met. I tell her she's right up there with my mom and those great pioneers of motherhood. And she does awesome. I tell people, my job is easy. I get to go out the house and interact with individuals. Her job is probably the more difficult one, because she has to keep it all together while I'm gone. So she's a great person, and I could talk about her for days, hours, years, months.
Well, that's why you married her, right?
Oh yeah, man. Oh yeah.
Now you say that you get to go out and interact with different people and everything. Now at Evergreen, being a person of color, how is that for you?
Oh man, it's both a challenge and a joy at the same time. And I say challenge because many times I'm the only African American and the only African American male, particularly in the room, of a bunch of academic dignitaries. And oftentimes my perspective is a little bit different, or I should say a lot different than theirs. And sometimes there's a fear of them not going to accept my perspective because it's so different and so radical based upon where I come from. And so that's challenging, to kind of articulate my experiences in a perspective that fits academics and academia and the administration. The joy comes from being able to be the only one as well, because I get to represent a culture of people that come out of some of the most deplorable circumstances ever. My mom, born and raised in Tuskegee, Alabama, in the middle of the civil rights movement, I'm able to honor that and become a beacon for those who don't understand where African Americans come from and what our heritage is all about and what our culture is and what we stand for. So the challenge of being the only one and the joy of being the only one is kind of always there, whether it was in the classroom or with the administration. It was wonderful to be able to represent my ethnic background, my race, my culture in a positive light, and kind of change those stereotypes that many people have about black men and what we are and what we stand for.
And was that accepted?
Many times, no. Many times I was deemed the exception to the rule. And that was kind of insulting for me, because I realized that people didn't experience enough black male culture to make those statements. They were going off of limited experiences and interactions. And so it wasn't accepted all the time. I was often viewed as, you know, you're different. And I oftentimes have to tell people, I'm not different. I'm just not what you see on TV every day. Right. And to break that mentality that all black men are either going to go to jail or have been to jail or don't take care of their children or are irresponsible. And I had to let people know, especially at Evergreen and other places as well, that that's not actually true. There are more of us graduating from college than getting out of the penitentiary. And I think people need to hear that message more and more.
I'm glad you were able to display that in a very positive way, because there are people out there who could try to get that message out there but get it twisted because of the lack or ability to articulate the way that you have. So kudos to you for being able to do that, man.
Oh man, I appreciate it.
And now you kind of have a double whammy, because, well, a triple whammy, you're also a veteran. So did that make it even more challenging for you as well? And you know, do you think that people maybe accepted you more because you were a veteran or because you were just smart?
Well, I think that, and I'm going to say this as candidly as possible, I think people saw me as an ends to a mean, as opposed to a means to an end. Meaning they reversed it. They looked at what they wanted as an end product, and they said, he can give us that. How he does it, we don't care. And I say that because as a veteran, I think a lot of people have preconceived notions of what we represent. And they bottle us into this one category, and they don't understand the envelopes that are there. And they looked at me and they said, well, this guy can be that picture perfect veteran to kind of keep us on track and check some boxes and make sure that we're doing the right thing. And I think what they found is my integrity and my authenticity would not allow me to just be an end to something, a goal of some sort. I wanted to be a part of the process.
You wanted to make a difference.
I wanted to make a difference. I wanted people to see that, one, not all veterans struggle. Not all veterans have a good process either. and there's no way to bottle veterans into one sort of category. And I wanted also for veterans to have a connecting piece to say, listen, I can be that bridge to help people understand what we are, who we are, without generalizing it. And just kind of, like you said, make a difference and be a positive light into some areas that people just stereotypically make dark, which I don't think is fair for what those of us who've embarked on a military journey have done. I think we get bottled up into things that aren't true, into preconceived notions, and people are often surprised at how well we function after the military. And I think that should be more of a standard, and we should help those who don't have the ability to thrive like those of us who have succeeded. But at the same time, let people know that we're human. We're not these robotic mannequins who are just doing things out of ritual, but we have feelings, we have emotions, we have ups, we have downs, we have things that we aspire to do. And I think, like you said it best, I wanted to make a difference, and hopefully I'm doing that.
Well, you are. Real quickly, could you tell me what was your most exciting, a really exciting moment at Evergreen? Something that was really like a crazy story or anything about Evergreen?
Man, you don't have enough time for the crazy story.
I can edit some time in here.
Day one was the most crazy experience, craziest experience for me. Sitting in the classroom, and someone said to me, "Wow, you're so articulate." And I went, "Why are you surprised?" And they was like, "Well, I just didn't expect you to just be able to verbalize yourself so well."
Isn't that sad?
And that was so sad for me. And so I asked this person to explain themselves. I said, "What do you mean? You know, why am I a surprise to you?" She said, "Because most black men your size can't speak very well."
Wow.
And I went, "How many black men my size have you come in contact with since being here at Evergreen?" And the person couldn't answer. They got really beat red, of course. And then I asked the person this. I said, "You know, in your years of teaching, have you ever told a white student they were articulate?" And the instructor couldn't say a word. And that was the craziest moment for me. One, because I had the courage to stand up for something that I believed in. And two, this person's statement that someone my size and from my racial background are normally not articulate, even though they've rarely interacted with someone who was African American and just happened to be tall, was surprising to me. And it was enlightening because I realized that I wasn't in the military anymore. I was in the real world.
Right.
And there are people out there who still think that all black people are the same, and they think all people from minorities are the same. And it was great for me because it helped me really solidify my goals while at Evergreen and in this world, to prove to people that there are many of us from different cultures of minority descent who are actually intelligent and are positive contributors in this world. And I often point to the inventions in this country. And I did a research project and I highlighted the fact that there were more inventions done by minorities than by any other culture group in this country.
Right. Right. Tyrone, I could sit here and I could talk to you for forever. You know that. And I got to cut this one. But it has been such an honor and a pleasure talking to you this morning, you know, and you coming out here in the rain, of course.
It's Washington. It rains every day.
It rains every day. But, you know, I just want to say before we sound off how proud I am of you.
Oh, man.
For doing everything that you do, for doing everything that you've done.
Wow.
And it feels good to know that there are people out there like you who are representing us in a very, very positive fashion.
Oh, yeah, man.
You know, and if you have anything to tell any student who's transitioning or thinking about coming to this this school of ours, what would be something that you would like to share?
I always tell students who are thinking about Evergreen, especially those who come from underrepresented communities, that you can do it. And I know it sounds like a presidential campaign speech of yes, you can, but I often tell them, this is the place where you can do it. And no matter what anybody else has ever told, you about what you can't do because of where you come from, or you know, what your race is, or what your color is, or what your height is, or what your gender is, that Evergreen is a place where you can come and you can accomplish any goal academically that you've ever had, and you can have fun doing it and meet some of the coolest people on the planet.
That's right, despite the stereotypes.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Tyrone, hey, thanks, man.
No problem. Eat money.
And I look forward to doing this again with you sometime.
Please,
okay?
Man. No, thank you for picking me. Thank you for picking me. I really appreciate it.
Not a problem. And we'll see you guys later.